It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Congress has been trying, and so far failing, to pass immigration reform over the past months in the midst of high numbers of border crossings and asylum requests. But this lack of movement on the issue of immigration is nothing new. It's been going on for years. There was a failed attempt at reform under President George W. Bush in 2006, another in 2013 led by the bipartisan Gang of Eight in Congress, and more in between. Our next guest says that we're in a particularly challenging political moment, but immigration reform has always been difficult in the United States, stretching back at least to World War II. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What changes do you want to see in U.S. immigration policy, if any? Do you see the core issue as a humanitarian crisis, illegal border crossings and security, something else? Is there a compromise that you'd like to see? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Daniel Tischner is professor of political science and faculty director of the Wayne Morris Center for Law and Politics at the University of Oregon. He recently published an article on the challenges of immigration reform in The Conversation. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
In just a moment, we'll dig through some of the history going back to World War II. But Dan, you say this year right now, meaningful reform in immigration is a pipe dream. What is particularly bad about early 2024 when it comes to the prospects of changes in our immigration system?
The obvious thing is it's very hard to achieve immigration reform during a presidential election year. And in this year in particular, clearly the Republican ticket's headed by former President Donald Trump, who has signaled to his loyalists in Congress that he really wants to have this stick as a campaign issue. Also, a time when things are really polarized in, between the parties in Congress. So you mentioned before in your intro about 2006 and 2013 as being challenges. There you had bipartisan compromise. And right now, just the divide between the parties is like a chasm.
Let's go back and trace some of the history that got us here. In that piece I mentioned in The Conversation, you start in the aftermath of World War II, a sense, I think, that something needed to change. But it took a couple decades to do it. Set the scene for us.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, you had in place something called national origins quotas, which really imposed severe restrictions on all kinds of illegal immigration into the country. And in particular, it placed a real privilege for those from Northern Western Europe. And so anyone from Asia, Africa, Southern Eastern European countries like Italy, Greece, and elsewhere were really restricted by these draconian barriers. And once we get after World War II, the United States emerges as this global superpower, feels an obligation towards refugees. But again, these really tough, stringent limitations kept us from being as expansive as a lot of policymakers on both sides of the aisle wanted to. Really, immigration was almost a trickle most of those years. And yet it kept on being held up. And at the heart of that was just stiff resistance from these kind of very restriction-minded committee chairs in Congress. And so it just kind of languished for years and years. And so you had President Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, a Democrat and a Republican, both trying to get something through, and it went nowhere. And it really wasn't until John F. Kennedy made this a signature campaign issue in his 1960 election that it gained real agenda support from the White House. Following his assassination, Lyndon Johnson actually hemmed and hawed about doing anything about it. He wasn't sure if he wanted to invest a lot of political capital on that issue. He saw it as kind of a political minefield for him and other Democrats. And eventually he was persuaded. And even after that, kind of faced all sorts of resistance, both in the House and Senate. And so it was only after a lot of arm twisting and a lot of deal making that we finally got in 1965, the Immigration and Nationality Act, which created a new preference system for legal immigration and increased the number of admissions. And also, as a concession to restriction-minded folks in Congress, created a Western Hemisphere ceiling, which actually spurred a fair amount of undocumented immigration. So that was one of those kind of Faustian bargains or bipartisan bargains, but it took decades.
Then we're going to fast forward a couple more decades. 1986, which people point to as the last major significant change when it comes to our immigration laws in the United States. Again, 1986, good long while ago. Tell us a little bit about the politics that led to that, the agreement that was reached and what it meant and how it set the stage for our modern immigration system.
Sure. So that one was also decades in the making. And, you know, early 70s, mid 70s, you had actually liberals in Congress, Congressman Peter Rodino from New Jersey, a number of organized labor folks who really wanted to see us enact something called employer sanctions, which was the notion that you can, as a nation, we ought to impose sanctions, civil and criminal, against employers who knowingly hired unauthorized immigrants. That encountered resistance both from the left and right for years, because on the right, there was a lot of resistance to imposing these regulations on employers. And on the left, you had liberals concerned that these kind of sanctions would create discrimination at the workplace against anyone who looked or sounded foreign. So fast forward to the Carter years. Carter tries to make an initiative, ends up exploding on him. It doesn't go anywhere. Reagan comes into office, and he's quite reluctant about it. But eventually, in 1986, you had, again, one of these bipartisan deals that was cut. And it included employer sanctions, which I mentioned a moment ago. It also included a legalization program for roughly 3 million undocumented immigrants living in the country, enhanced Border Patrol resources and other security measures, and then finally a guest worker program. So it had these four elements to it. And you might note that there's some contradictions between them, which is kind of, you know, at the heart of these kind of compromises, which it cuts in both pro-immigrant and restrictionist directions oftentimes.
Talking to Daniel Tischner from the University of Oregon. He researches immigration policy and its history in the United States. We're pulling back from the day-to-day arguments about immigration, getting some historical perspective here. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions or your thoughts. That's 800-642-1234. Dan, having been alive through a lot of the last bunch of rounds of immigration efforts, and been in the media for part of it, it seems like there's a recurring, almost constant argument that we're in some form of crisis, especially at the southern border. Is there some reality to that? How much of that notion is politicized?
I think there's definite reality to it in the sense that we have seen kind of record numbers of asylum seekers at the border in December and January and so forth. And there is a sense that policymakers on both sides of the aisle see that there's some chaos there that needs to be addressed. At the same time, you know, it's not uncommon for politicians to, to exaggerate this. And so it's probably a bit of both. I think is the short answer. I think most Americans, looking writ large, looking more broadly at the immigration system, would say that it is broken in key ways. And that's both folks who are pro-immigrant rights and those who worry about porous borders. So on both ends of the spectrum, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the system and feeling like it's not working the way it should. And that runs everything from concerns that we're not addressing our biggest needs in terms of legal immigration, to those who feel like we do need to shore up border security, to those who point out that we have more than 10 million undocumented people living in the country who are kind of in the shadows of American life. So there's a host of things that you can point to as challenges in the system. And actually, that kind of goes to the heart of why we're often stuck on immigration reform, because a lot of Americans and a lot of lawmakers can't even agree exactly what the problem is.
Has the nature of people coming across the southern border changed? It seems like once upon a time, the mode case is somebody trying to avoid detection crossing the border in order to seek employment, as you mentioned, in the shadows. With asylum seekers, it seems like the goal is to present at some point and make an asylum request. First of all, am I right about that change? And second, does that change the nature of the problem we're dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, you're right that exactly, you know, for years, the notion was that your unauthorized immigrant was trying to evade detection and slip into the country. And in the current mode, if you're an asylum seeker, you may have, you know, hundreds, thousands who are actually seeking out Border Patrol agents to have their cases heard and to be legally allowed in. So I mean, that's definitely a change. The other thing I would note is that as a change at what's happening in the southern border is that, you know, for generations, the typical entrant from across the Mexican border, U.S.-Mexican border, was Mexican. And today, a significant portion are actually coming from other countries in Central and South America.
Daniel Tischner is with us, professor of political science at the University of Oregon. He's talking with us about why immigration reform has been historically difficult in the U.S., in Congress in particular. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Immigration reform, our guest says, unlikely to happen in election year. What immigration policies do you want to see the next president, the next Congress put into place? Do you think about immigration policy when you're deciding who to vote for? Have you experienced the U.S. immigration system as an immigrant, as an asylum seeker yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about why immigration reform has historically been so difficult to achieve in the U.S. Our guest is Daniel Tischner, professor of political science at the University of Oregon. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the history of immigration and immigration policies in the United States? Why do you think it's such a difficult issue to reach agreement on in Congress? Do you see room for bipartisan compromise? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
Well, I'm old enough to remember the Reform Act of 1965. It was pushed through by Senator Edward Kennedy, the deceased president's brother. And they got it through because they finally persuaded the unions that there was not going to be a danger of them losing strength by the dilution of the workforce and thus wages. The liberal wing of the Democrat Party was in the process of taking over the unions totally, and they told the unions that the additional number of low-wage, unskilled, uneducated people flooding the country would be beneficial because it would bring more Democrat votes. And that's what it's been about ever since.
John, thanks for the call. First of all, the issue, Dan, of immigrants' impact on wages and on labor unions, that has been a point of contention over the decades, right?
Absolutely. And John's totally right about how that was a key sticking point for the 65 Act. And what's really interesting is how union leadership and the AFL-CIO has evolved on this issue. So for most of our history, unions have been very much concerned about the capacity of immigrant labor to undermine working conditions, wages, make it very hard for collective bargaining. And so I mentioned several minutes ago something called the National Origins Quota System, which was kind of this very draconian restrictionist system we had for much of the 20th century. And the AFL, the American Federation of Labor, was a key moving force behind that. So, yeah, so all that, you know, created lots of tensions for union members for years. After the 65 Act, what's interesting is that you had, again, organized labor very concerned about undocumented immigration and competition from immigrant workers. But then that begins to evolve during the 1980s. And so by the time of the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act, the AFL-CIO was strongly in favor of a legalization program for 3 million immigrants in the country, wanted employer sanctions, and so wanted better workplace control, but was starting to focus on really intently on A, holding employers accountable, and B, seeing immigrant workers as individuals who native-born workers should be in solidarity with. And so by the time we get to the 20th century, the SEIU and other key unions were actively recruiting among these new immigrant workers, such that today you can find the AFL-CIO and most unions squarely behind immigrant rights in lots of key ways.
And then John alluded to something that's been viewed almost as a conspiracy theory, but some Republicans arguing that Democrats are in favor of more immigration reform to bring in more Democratic voters. How much of a sticking point is that? Is that notion, at least, Dan, to prevent Republicans from reaching compromises on immigration?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's actually not a sure thing in terms of party identification with regard to new immigrants about where they'll fall. And if you look at immigrants, first of all, our immigrants are so diverse. They come from so many different backgrounds. They have different kinds of social, economic, and political values that fall on a wide spectrum of conservative and liberal lines. So, and what's also interesting on in that regard is that, since we're doing a little bit of a historical dive this afternoon, is that if you look at someone like Ronald Reagan, Reagan regularly invoked the notion that the United States was a city upon a hill and waxed very, very romantically about immigrants as being, you know, fundamental to the national identity. And in a more practical sense, he and his aides looked at new immigrants as critical to building a new Republican majority. So how quickly things shift on that, right? And so, yeah, so we've kind of evolved to a moment when key leaders in the Republican Party, in fact, as you say, you know, focus on the notion that, you know, that immigrants are being, you know, crassly recruited to replace native-born voters and so forth. The evidence is actually that things are quite slow in terms of once immigrants get here, in terms of registering to vote and so forth. And what's interesting, again, is, you know, Reagan and George W. Bush saw those voters as very much good candidates to recruit to the Republican Party as well. Is it the key sticking point? Good question. There's a lot of things that divide Republican and Democratic members of Congress on this. What's striking is it wasn't that long ago when it would be very hard to predict exactly where a Democrat or Republican in Congress might fall on this issue.
Thanks, John, for calling. Bob is with us now in Kaukauna. Bob, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering when the Republicans had the House, Senate, and presidency in 2017, did they do anything with the immigration policy?
A good question, Dan.
No, I mean, I think it was, the answer is no. I mean, what's striking is that you obviously had significant unilateral executive action. So the so-called, you know, effort to restrict migration from predominantly Arab and Muslim countries, the so-called Muslim ban. But there actually was not a significant amount of agreement in terms of what to do specifically on a number of longer lasting immigration policies in terms of legislation. And so, For instance, the Trump administration, along with Senator Tom Cotton in the Senate, had plans to significantly restrict legal immigration, but that was not popular with a significant portion of the Republican Party in either the House or the Senate at the time. That was actually kind of considered dead on arrival.
Bob, thanks for the call. And just our last minute, Dan, how much does congressional inaction on immigration exacerbate the problems at the border?
It exacerbates it in a lot of ways. First, it clearly empowers the executive to act really, you know, independently without any sort of congressional oversight on this. And the problem with that is then, you know, it basically means that we don't have continuity in how our immigration system is governed, because it switches every time we switch parties controlling the White House. It also ends up devolving a lot of things at the state level, as we've seen, where we have, you know, border states, governors taking certain actions. And finally, it brings the courts in. So almost every component of our governing system is involved with this, except those decision makers who are empowered by the Constitution to make these choices, which is Congress.
Dan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Daniel Tischner, professor of political science and faculty director of the Wayne Morris Center for Law and Politics at the University of Oregon. He talked to us today about his recent article in The Conversation. The headline, "Immigration Reform Has Always Been Tough and Rarely Happens in Election Years." I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.